This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 8th of March, 2024. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
The first thing to say is that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Keeping A&E should have been option. Green space pledge for Army base site. And MP quizzes water boss on ongoing problems. And the first headline story, Nick, please.
Yes. Keeping A&E should have been an option. A Winchester man petitioning to keep the A&E open has labelled the consultation process as flawed. Philip Glassborough has teamed up with fellow city resident Chantal Cousins on a campaign to save Winchester's A&E. More than 17,000 people have signed the petition. Although Mr. Glassborough, a writer aged 73 of Berwick Road, believes hospital bosses have the right intentions, he believes the consultation for a new hospital is unfair, with keeping the A&E at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital not even being listed as an option. With the consultation ending on Sunday, March the 17th, Mr. Glassborough is urging people to have their say. He said, "I admire all the people running the consultation and I think they're trying to do their best for us, but I feel the consultation is flawed. We're not being given choices, and that's my main concern. The consultation questions are baffling and poorly worded. A couple of friends of mine who work in healthcare couldn't make sense of it." Mr. Glassborough added, "When they run a survey, it has to be objective. It should be a genuine consultation, with the subject still in flux and not yet decided. But this has clearly been decided on, and don't think our calls for an A&E are being considered. My GP at Friarsgate hadn't heard about it. If they haven't heard, that's quite worrying, because more people are going to be going to their doctors without an A&E. Most people I speak to still don't know about this. The first meeting I went to was online, and there were only 6 people, as well as the 11 high-ranking people from the NHS. It had been poorly publicised. Dr. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer at the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, said, "We are keen to hear from as many people as possible on how our proposals would impact them. And we are encouraging patients, local people, communities and our staff to take part in the ongoing public consultation. It's important to remember that a public consultation is not a vote or referendum. This is because we also have a duty to ensure that any proposals that we take forward will enable us to provide safer, higher quality care with sustainable clinical services for the future, with sufficient specialist staff to run services as well."
Green space pledge for Army base site. Developers have promised to provide 60 acres of green space to the public within their plans to redesign a former Army base in Winchester. An online survey has been launched to allow residents to have their say on proposed green space at Bushfield Camp. Following consultation with residents, stakeholders and the wider population, the Church Commissioners for England, in partnership with Legal and General Investment Management and Gisborne, have committed as part of the current planning application to protect and provide approximately 60 acres of Bushfield Camp as publicly accessible green space. Through the new online survey, the developers are hoping to understand how they can work with the community to maximise the future potential of Bushfield's green space. The survey asks residents what they would like to see incorporated as part of the land to help the developers decide how to manage the land moving forward. John Weir, head of real estate for the Church Commissioners, said, "The launch of the online survey is testament to our commitment to place community at the heart of the vision for Bushfield. Across more than half a dozen public consultation events, city centre stands and online feedback, we've gathered a diverse range of ideas from the public for this significant piece of land. We want to gather even more local insight to support our commitment to the long-term stewardship of our estates in order to achieve greener growth. At Bushfield, this means implementing sympathetic development and delivering best practice management of the natural surroundings. Done well is an approach which will deliver a wealth of benefits, enabling communities to thrive for generations to come." Ben Rogers, head of regeneration for LGI and Real Estate's division, said, "Engaging with the community via this survey, we hope to fully realise Bushfield's potential as a best-in-class employment-led campus. By providing legal access to the green space, we want to not only maximise Bushfield's social and economic impact, but also the environmental opportunity. If approved, the outline planning application submitted in October will see the Bushfield Camp development deliver an innovation park to the south of the city centre, attracting major employers to Winchester looking for new headquarters across life science, academia, media and health sectors."
MP quizzes water boss on ongoing problems. Winchester's MP recently met the boss of Southern Water for an update on the company's recent performance. Meeting at Platform One Cafe at Shawford Railway Station, Steve Brine raised a variety of concerns with CEO Lawrence Gosden relating to combined storm overflows, or CSOs, when sewage is discharged into watercourses, issues at Eastern Water Supply Works in January, Southern Water's recent cyber attacks, works at the Otterbourne Water Supply Works, and chronic flooding in Banbridge. These storm overflows continue to be one of the biggest points of contention relating to water companies in the UK, and Mr. Brine has dedicated his time to more closely understanding the issue. The storm overflow discharge reduction plan, brought about by the Environment Act, requires water companies to make their largest infrastructure spend in water company history to increase capacity. It is backed up by £56 billion of capital investment. The Environment Agency and Ofwat have launched the largest ever criminal and civil investigations into wastewater treatment works, and they've dramatically increased funding for the inspections via the Plan for Water. The government has also ring-fenced new unlimited fines from water companies so that they don't go to HM Treasury but stay in DEFRA for environmental projects. Last spring, the Secretary of State announced the storm overflow target would be enshrined in law. During Mr. Brine's meeting on Friday, February the 23rd, he learned about Southern Water's new interactive map, which allows users to see every storm overflow in the region. It also includes planned works for the overflows that currently do not meet the government's target. The past two winters have seen the local community hampered by disruptions to the water supply, stemming from issues at Otterbourne and Eastern Water Supply Works. Mr. Brine robustly criticised Southern Water on national and local media during the multiple outages and is now welcoming the investment, which hopes to reduce chances of repeats. Southern Water has announced the Southampton Link Main, which seeks to connect Otterbourne Water Supply Works with Andover and Testwood, ensuring water can swiftly be moved around the network in line with demand. These pipes will make up part of the wider Hampshire grid. Following his meeting, Mr. Brine said, "A really insightful and useful meeting with Lawrence Gosden and Southern Water, which allows me to understand the issues facing my constituents more clearly. I always appreciated the openness and honesty about their progress as well as their failings, and left them in no doubt we need to see significant progress in all areas."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Nick and Richard will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Baker, Alan, passed away peacefully at Shawford Springs Care Home on the 14th of February 2024, aged 95 years. Britain, Christopher Michael. Christopher passed away on the 7th of February 2024, aged 77 years. Burrows, Andrew, passed away at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 8th of February 2024, aged 54 years. Drain, Mary, died on the 3rd of February 2024, aged 94. Drinkwater, Trevor Sydenham, known as Trev or Trev the Pig, died unexpectedly of a heart attack on Tuesday the 6th of February 2024 in Tewkesbury, aged 63 years. French, Gilbert Edward, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 14th of February 2024. Goodyear, Royston, known as Roy, passed away peacefully on Monday the 5th of February, aged 95 years. Hall, Marion Elizabeth, née Leach, passed away in Royal Derby Hospital on the 8th of February 2024, after a short illness. Jones, Christina, known as Tina, passed away peacefully on the 24th of February 2024, aged 89 years. Mitham, Nora Lillian, née Armstrong, late of Alsford, passed away peacefully on the 17th of February 2024, aged 95 years. Morgan, Lynn, passed away peacefully in Winchester on the 10th of February 2024. Osmond, Andrew William, known as Oz, died on Friday the 16th of February 2024, aged 57 years. Simpson, Elizabeth June, known as Liz, passed away peacefully on the 15th of February 2024, aged 64 years. Tanner, Irene Lucy Mary, passed away peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital, Hampshire, on the 14th of February 2024, aged 90. Thornycroft, Aurea June, on the 13th of February 2024, aged 87. Upton, Stanley Henry George, passed away peacefully on the 14th of February 2024, aged 94 years. Walker, Charles, known as Mike, passed away peacefully at home on the 24th of February, aged 92 years. And Whitfield, Patricia, peacefully on the 11th of February 2024, aged 89 years. As it's the season of Lent, we have two items from Christian Comment this week. The first has been written by the Venerable Andrew W. Doughty, Archdeacon Emeritus of Bermuda, the former Vicar of Chilworth and North Baddersley. The title is Let Lent Help You Grow in Love and Grace. Thank you, Nick.
We are now midway through the 40 days of Lent, the season of preparation for Easter. And if you are anything like me, your Lenten commitment to prayer, study and fasting is beginning to wane. Despite my very best hope to walk a holy Lent, my commitment is slowly drifting away with the tasks and distractions of ordinary life and relationships. While giving up treats like sugar, meat, chocolate, ice cream or alcohol seemed a good idea just 2 weeks ago, the business and distraction of ordinary life has tested me. Perhaps then we all need a reminder that Lent is about testing, not about failing. It is definitely not about punishing ourselves with self-mortification. Nor should any of us feel that we have failed when we are no longer able to keep up our Lenten commitments, or indeed any other good intention task that we commit to throughout the year. This season of preparation for Easter began on Ash Wednesday, just 16 days ago, and goes on until Good Friday and Easter Sunday. But did you notice that the beginning of Lent on Ash Wednesday fell on February the 14th, Valentine's Day this year? It's one of those rare moments when the church's liturgical calendar and the Clinton card calendar coincide. It last happened in 1945 and will only happen once more for the rest of this century in 2029. For me, it was a reminder that Lent is always about love and grace, about letting go of distractions. Over the course of many years in parish ministry and in numerous school Ash Wednesday services, I would say to the young people gathered that the sign of cross on the forehead in Ash was really God giving each and every one of us a kiss on the forehead. God's ex. Lent, you see, is essentially about God forgiving us for our sins and assuring us of his constant and unchanging love and mercy, however much we may be tested and no matter how many times we fail. As the Anglican Church's proper preface for Lent describes it, through fasting, prayer, and acts of service, you bring us back to your generous heart. This Lent, allow our generous, huge-hearted God to help you grow in love and grace. And that one was from the Venerable Andrew W. Doughty, Archdeacon Emeritus of Bermuda, former Vicar of Chilworth and North Baddersley.
And the second piece is from the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester. Richard, please.
How is your journey through Lent 2024 going?
as we approach the halfway mark this Lent, I want to encourage you to keep going. At this time of year, the church calendar commemorates the priest and poet George Herbert, 1593-1633. His relatively short life continues to have a powerful influence. I quoted from George Herbert last month, and do so happily again. He's one of my favourite poets. Herbert gives us a wonderful paradox in his poem Lent, in which he claims that the season is both for fasting, so that we can starve sin, and also feasting. Perhaps this poem is what inspired a former Bishop of Toronto, Terry Finlay, to write this Lenten reflection of opposites. Fast from excess and feast on simplicity. Fast from negatives and feast on alternatives. Fast from discontent and feast on gratitude. Fast from gossip and feast on silence. Fast from self-concern and feast on compassion. Fast from anxiety and feast on faith. I find this so helpful and hopeful because it assumes that we have a choice. We're not simply helpless in the face of circumstances or forced to be shaped by them. If you run through the reflection, is it in tune with your natural inclinations? Would you prefer to swap the words fast and feast? So, fast from simplicity and feast on excess? Which will create happiness for you in the long term? How we behave and the habits we adopt can become blessings or curses for us and for those around us. I do hope and pray that this challenge to choose what you're going to feast on and what to fast from will be helpful during the second half of Lent. This weekend we celebrate Mothering Sunday, sometimes also known as Refreshment Sunday. I'm told that at the cathedral we will be distributing 250 bunches of daffodils. Mothering Sunday music will be led by the junior choir, a tremendous sign and feast of new life and hope among us, as the inspiration of the choral tradition is shared with children more widely. You're warmly invited to come in person or online. The Cathedral Holy Week booklet with services and events from Palm Sunday to Easter Day will be online next week, with booklets available from Mothering Sunday, so do please take a look. At the Cathedral, we're looking forward to welcoming our Good Friday preacher, the Reverend Dr. Gillian Strain, whose own experience of healing has deeply informed her faith and understanding. I do pray that you will allow God to draw closer to you this year during Lent and Holy Week to experience the feast of love, joy and peace that Easter offers.
Thank you, both of you. And now this week's letters to the editor. Deborah, can you start us off with A&E concerns, please?
Yes, and this is written from Eileen Berry. I'm sorry to have to come back to the subject of A&E, and indeed Winchester Hospital. It is so important to thousands of people, not just in Winchester, but also the ever-rising population on the outskirts. The facts are, there are 11 housing estates in Winchester alone, not counting the very small developments that are being built around Winchester. Then we come to the student population that is growing in number. But as we speak, there is the possibility of many more coming. Not only is a local A&E needed, it is imperative. How better is our hospital to accommodate the population explosion in the area? What is being advocated to be built in Mitchell Dever and Basingstoke is not going to help all the residents, young and old, in and around Winchester. And the transport links, or lack of them, will cause unneeded stress. My personal opinion, people will suffer because of distance and time when someone is in a heart attack and brain bleeds. Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Andrew Beadle writes about MP expulsion. Rachel Masker, in her letter, chronicled February the 29th, has reminded those of us living in Winchester at the time of Flick Drummond's expulsion from the City Council for failing to attend any meeting in 6 months after she had moved to the USA, but had failed to resign as a counsellor. I've also heard a rumour that Flick was rejected by local party members when Winchester Conservative Association sought a parliamentary candidate in 2007. I can confirm that rumour is correct, as I was at the selection meeting. However, there is no disgrace in that, as I recall there was a slate of good candidates for what was seen as a very winnable seat. This time, there was no general meeting of party members, as under Conservative Party rules, Flick had the right, as the sitting MP for part of the new constituency, to become the candidate once Steve Bryan had decided to stand down. However, had there been a full selection meeting, and had she made clear to party members that she supported the downgrading of the A&E unit at RHCH, I am doubtful whether she would have been selected. That's from Andrew Beadle, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill.
Meanwhile, Bill Ledbetter also reflects on election time thus. It occurs to me that now might be the time to get rid of the first past the post in favour of a system that does not disenfranchise so many of the electorate. It might even save the Conservative Party from total elimination. Not so much Tory ineptitude is in the public gaze. Economic failure, post office, Rwanda, sewage in rivers, COVID handling, PPE scandals, untendered provision of services, etc. The complete annihilation of the Tories must be a real possibility. That says Bill Ledbetter from Highcliffe Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Cycle bullying, writes Susan Stockwell. The video clip of a cyclist being bullied into backtracking to the nearest passing place by a lorry driver should be sent to the traffic commissioners and the owners of the lorry reported to the traffic commissioners who license the running of HGVs. Cyclists are bullied, nay terrorised, on this country's roads by all vehicles, but an HGV is particularly frightening. I hope this lady is able to make the necessary report. Susan Stockwell, Britannia Road, Poole.
Budget for all. Britain is in a real mess. You have to be incredibly lucky to find an NHS dentist, while millions of us are still waiting for NHS treatment. That's before we even get to the unaffordable energy bills or councils going bust. The government needs to deliver a budget that works for people in our area and breathes life back into Britain. Rather than rumoured tax cuts, which tend to benefit the very wealthiest, the Chancellor should make the tax system fairer to invest in this country, our high streets and our healthcare system. He could raise tens of billions of pounds by closing unfair tax loopholes and ensuring that super rich people and companies pay what's fair. This way, tax can be used for good, so that everyone benefits. Will the Chancellor do the right thing for once? And that's from Jane True from South Wanstead.
And Richard Eve, in similar vein, urges the Chancellor to invest wisely. How is it that the Tory Chancellor says he's able to find the money for further tax cuts, but not for adequate funding of the services on which we all depend to live productive, healthy and happy lives? Hampshire is no different to any other part of the country in this regard, and here we see bus services being slashed, GP and dental appointments unavailable when needed, the infrastructure from roads to water to railways crumbling, affordable childcare out of reach for many parents. The argument made is that tax cuts fund investment, spending and economic growth. But the truth of the matter is that despite what we're told, there are in fact no tax cuts and taxes remain at the highest level since the 1970s and are still increasing. we can see plainly at a local level that the services we rely on to live economically productive lives, such as healthcare, childcare, transport, are being steadily stripped of funding, putting a bigger tax burden on fewer workers in an increasingly vicious circle. Next time the Chancellor finds a few billion pounds, I suggest he invests it more wisely, says Richard Eve of Alsford Road, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes about the Popham Plan. Considering the dramatic effect, not only on the locality, but the wider area, almost joining Winchester and Basingstoke, it is no surprise that there are serious concerns about the Popham Plan in the Chronicle on February the 29th. 3,000 homes equates to potentially 6,000 residents and realistically 2,000 vehicles. A village? Doubtless it would morph into a new town. I'm a pessimist when it comes to such plans. Development of brownfield sites does not impact the green areas and has less impact on services and infrastructure. Once developed, it cannot be reversed. We owe it to future generations to protect our precious countryside. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
John Kay has an interesting flash in the pan. Reading about prospective Tory candidate for Winchester Flick Drummond's unintentionally hilarious and politically deaf suggestion that we should refrain from flushing the loo when it's raining calls to mind the advice given by the Dustin Hoffman character in the comedy movie Meet the Fockers. When it's yellow, be mellow. When it's brown, flush it down. Wise words for these stressful and water-conscious times, and certainly more sensible than Flicks. And that's from John Kay from Otterbourne.
Jean Matthews has statue dismay. The idea of the Jane Austen statue to be installed in Winchester Cathedral Close at a cost of £100,000 has filled me with dismay, Chronicle February 29th. Currently, in the cathedral, there are many obstacles that prevent disabled folk from accessing and using the cathedral safely and comfortably. One major example is that wheelchair users can only access the presbytery and choir for services by means of an antiquated chairlift, which most users hate and which has to be operated by volunteers on steep stone steps with no handrail. I suggest that those involved in the commissioning of the £100,000 Jane Austen statue might like to reconsider their priorities. Jean Matthews, Cannon Street, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Christopher O'Neill, and it's entitled Society Definition. Widely accepted definition of the term society is a community, nation, or broad grouping of people having common traditions, institutions, and collective activities and interests. Alarmingly, cracks caused by the actions of national and local government are appearing in our society, which, if not corrected, could lead to widespread discontent and disorder. 12 years of austerity have left inadequate law enforcement, a limping NHS, and at a time of war in Europe and international terrorism, armed forces with manpower so diminished that there's talk of conscription. These problems have been aggravated by a central government facing proven allegations of being unstable, demoralised and disaffected. The Times recently reported claims by the Institute of Government that public services were performing at their worst since 2010 due to funding cuts and lack of investment. According to a local government association survey, Hampshire County Council is in danger of issuing a bankruptcy notice in the next year. If true, this is despite £500 million of cuts over recent years. Now we're faced with another of their consultations, advocating further savage cuts to local services, totalling £132 million. Few services have escaped their attention, notably those affecting children, the disadvantaged, the elderly, and the disabled. This determination to cut services does our elected representatives no credit. Currently, we live in one of the world's richest countries, heavily taxed, but with failing public services. Instead of properly financing the many areas of deprivation and inadequacies in our society, we have a government reducing national insurance contributions and hinting about tax cuts next April. This is money that should be used for the provision of services we desperately need. Additionally, there are many individuals and organisations well able to contribute more for the good of our wider society. It's time for a change. Christopher O'Neill, Chair of Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section, Clarendon House, Monarch Way, Winchester.
The next letter is from Mark Ellis of the Wessex Cancer Trust. Donations sought. We're really grateful to people who bring their pre-loved donations to us to sell in our shops because they enable us to raise vital funds to support local people affected by cancer. As we prepare to open our sixth shop, we're looking for lots more donations, particularly good quality clothing to sell. If you're not sure what you can give, just think, would I buy this from a charity shop? Is it sellable, safe, clean, complete, and in good condition? If it is, we'd be delighted to receive it. The charity shops receive many fantastic donations, but also gets a lot of items it can't sell because they're dirty, broken, or inappropriate. These include unclean and torn clothes, incomplete puzzles, and even, on occasion, used toothbrushes and false teeth. Volunteers give 250 hours of their time each week to sort and display around 300 bags of donated goods. Sadly, up to 75% of items are unsellable, and it costs the charity £6,000 every year to dispose of them. You can find Wessex Cancer Support's week shop at Unit 2, Week Gate, Stockbridge Road, Winchester, SO226EL. They are open Monday to Saturday, 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. If you're not sure what you can donate, please call them on 01962 867058. That's 01962 867058, or you can email weeke at wessexcancer org.uk. So that's weeke@wessexcancer.org.uk. You can find out more about the local cancer support available by visiting www.wessexcancer.org.uk. And that's from Mark Ellis, Head of Retail at Wessex Cancer.
Thank you.
Pamela Broomfield wants to thank the hospital. I recently spent 2 weeks in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and would like to express my deep thanks and gratitude to the staff and helpers of Kemp Welsh Ward. They gave such wonderful care and help. Thank you, you lovely people. Pamela Broomfield, Berwick Road, Weeke, Winchester.
And another thank you letter from Jean Carswell. I want to congratulate Wessex Cars on sending me two of the kindest, most helpful taxi drivers recently. I'm currently suffering from severe fluid retention, which makes it extremely difficult to walk and lift my heavy, swollen legs in and out of a car. Both of the taxi drivers taking and bringing me back from my friend's house in the city centre were so understanding and kind, helping me in and out of the cars, carrying my bags to the door, and even, on return, making sure I got into my house safely, putting my bags inside. I was so impressed with their kindness that I wanted to express my gratitude publicly. Jean Carswell, Hazel Court, Winchester.
And a final thank you letter to finish with. And this one is entitled Mr. Thorpe Tracy, about one of our very talking news presenters. While listening to AWAZ FM, that's spelt AWAZ, the other day, I had a rather pleasant surprise. I was about to turn the radio off after the music stopped when I heard the name Noel Thorpe Tracy. Surely this was my old English teacher from Alderman Quilly Secondary School back in the late 70s. If this was indeed the case, then I would like to reassure him that his efforts have not completely been in vain. I'm still a complete drifter, but I'm fortunate enough to have had several poems published in the national press, thanks in no small part to the inspiration of both Mr. Thorpe Tracy and Mr. Bisson. Also, it was a very interesting programme. Incidentally, I still wince when I hear the words firstly and quicker. And that's from Glyn Bell, Cobbett Way, Botley, and there's an editor's note to follow it. Winchester Talking Newspaper records excerpts from the Hampshire Chronicle, which is transmitted on AWAS FM. For more on the charity's work, go to winchestertalkingnews.com, or to listen to the show, go to awasfm.co.uk. And as I said, that's AWAS, A-W-A-Z, FM, all one word.
Oh, thank you very much, Richard. I didn't know we were out
did
there.
You know? Yes, I did.
Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news at Hampshire Chronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment, letter from Westminster, first person and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with Trinity, Homelessness and Need for Z-Pods. She writes, on the one hand, it is good news that Trinity Winchester is to make a major investment in tackling homelessness. We report that the centre on Derngate is planning to convert underused space in its large building into 3 rooms for emergency housing, as well as develop 5 modular buildings called Z-Pods on a site to be determined. Trinity estimates the schemes will cost around £1 million, and both are subject to planning permission. This is to be welcomed, but on the other hand, one cannot help but think it would have been unnecessary had funding from central government not substantially dried up in the years of austerity from 2010. Winchester has had a homelessness problem for decades, hence the reason why Trinity started in the first place, in the 1980s, in the church hall at Holy Trinity Church in Upper Brook Street, only 200 yards from its current location. Had the financial support not been reduced in the 2010s, it is unlikely that Trinity Winchester would have to be looking to spend the money now. This investment would have cost benefits, not least because it would reduce the use of bed and breakfast accommodation in the Winchester district by £4,200 a week. This issue is not going away, and for chronic problems such as homelessness, it is potentially getting worse, with the County Council proposing to withdraw all funding for vulnerable adults who would otherwise be homeless. And investing in tackling homelessness is not the end of the problem. There is mental health, education and training to consider too. These too have been the victims of austerity. It's the turn of the Meon Valley MP, Flick Drummond, to pen a few words for us. Richard has the letter from Westminster.
I do, and here it is. As I write this, there is real hope that a ceasefire can be negotiated in Gaza following many months of conflict. Talks have been taking place with both sides through the US and Qatar to try and reach a settlement that must include the release of all the hostages following the dreadful Hamas attack on Israel on October the 7th last year. Since then, many thousands have died and the humanitarian situation in Gaza has become unbearable. People are starving and many thousands have no home. Aid needs to be able to get into Gaza in huge quantities to help the population. My feeling is the US is now putting more pressure on Israel to stop its military action. I'm not sure an indefinite ceasefire can be brokered while Hamas, a terrorist organisation, remains in power in Gaza, but there is a talk of a six-month end to hostilities that can be concluded that would give the population of Gaza much-needed breathing space and allow time for aid and agencies to come in and help. There are strong passions on both sides around this conflict. However, I know that nearly everyone wants to see an end to the fighting and the deaths. I hope that by the time you read this, this has been achieved, if only temporarily. If that happens, people can keep talking. My own view has not changed. We need a two-state solution if there is to be peace in the region. This is something I have pushed the government to continue to work towards, and I have spoken in Parliament about it on several occasions. A ceasefire would also lower tensions throughout the Middle East and hopefully stop the Houthis from attacking the international shipping in the Red Sea. Hospital managers have been busy in Winchester over these past few weeks, making a strong case for the new hospital for Mid-Hampshire and reconfiguration of services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital here in Winchester. My view is that the rationale for a 24-hour urgent treatment centre and then specialist services at the new £900 million hospital, including A&E, is gaining ground. These managers have also made the case that improved maternity services at the new hospital would be better and safer for mums. The facts here are simple. Do we trust these experienced and qualified health professionals to know what they're doing? They are at the front line of delivering acute NHS services, and they say a new hospital is the best way forward. This does not mean we should not question them or air our concerns. We absolutely should. But we must also be ready to accept their expert judgments. Some have said they all want these facilities in Winchester because it's convenient. But many of these services are not in Winchester now. Those with heart conditions and some cancers must go to Basingstoke or Southampton already. I think I'd rather travel for 14 miles to a brand new hospital with all the staff and equipment needed to save my life. And, as I've made clear, that hospital must only be 10 minutes away at Junction 7 of the M3, the preferred option, and not at the existing North Hampshire Hospital site in Basingstoke. That is too far. Flick Drummond MP, Member of Parliament for Meon Valley.
Now, George Hayter writes about a strange place for a TV star in first person this week. Here's Deborah.
In 1982, a big block of about 80 flats in Stockwell in London was entirely occupied by squatters. One of the flats, 291F Clapham Road, was occupied by a 30-year-old graphics assistant from Hampshire. That was me. I remember going to one of the neighbouring flats for a party one night and finding that, as well as mostly squatters, the guests included a television star. The much-loved actress had starred in possibly the most popular British comedy ever. She played Sybil Fawlty in the BBC series Fawlty Towers, made 3 years or so before the party. Now, Prunella Scales was being ignored. Perhaps people didn't know what to say to a star, or maybe the party was too dark for many to recognise her. And parties at that time were going through a curious phase. I remember going to a latest thing video restaurant in London around 1982 and Popstar's Dollar were singing about dancing in the video tech. Video recording had not long been invented, and the falling cost of VHS technology was bringing it within the reach of consumers. At the party, guests were impressed that video screens were showing a film. It was the downbeat prison drama Papillon, and I found Prunella Scales dutifully sitting in front of a screen, watching miserable Dustin Hoffman and Steve McQueen. This was a party, so I thought I'd better amuse the celebrity. She told me that Dick, the party host, had invited her. She was in a West End play and Dick was her dresser. She asked about me and I told her I worked for the BBC. She brightened up. I was showbiz like her. But then she asked, "What do you do?" Her curiosity curtained when I said it was my job to type in the end credits. She searched for a suitable response and eventually came up with, "Do you enjoy it?" Then she looked alarmed at having put a tactless question to someone in a hopelessly boring job. I assured her the job was surprisingly varied. It included football results, for example. But I think the thoughts of typing football results only added to her discomfort. Poor Prunella must have come to the party on her way home from the theatre, with her driver and car waiting outside the squats. I didn't know at the time that she had two teenage sons at home, as well as perhaps her husband, actor Timothy West, if he wasn't away working. So it was generous of her to find time for a party thrown by a junior backstage employee. Party host Dick was a flamboyant character who owned a parrot as well as one of the first affordable video cameras. Eventually, he would land a well-paid job as an ITV cameraman. The co-host, his girlfriend, also worked in theatre, in costume design, I think. The squatted flats were owned by the London Borough of Lambeth, which had left them empty for years, I believe. It had emptied the flats of tenants in preparation for refurbishment, but the council failed to find the money to carry out the work. I suppose my parents were not proud of me squatting, but they didn't object. I lived in squats for about 2 years, which helped me save for a deposit on a mortgage. Squatting's almost unknown now. A few years ago, the law was changed to make it a crime. Squatting helped me, though, and thousands of other young people, and presumably it reduced the proportion of UK homes lying empty. A few years ago, despite having dementia, Prunella Scales co-presented with her husband Channel 4's Great Canal Journeys documentary series. Last year he published a book, Prue and Me, about their marriage. I was impressed by Prunella's modesty and fearlessness, qualities which probably make her dementia a little less hard to deal with. I'm glad the video everywhere craze didn't last. It ruined that party.
Thank you. Now, Bulgarum has come up with three short pieces this week from an alternative point of view. Tell us more, Nick.
Right, the first one is headed Police Move In at Depot. A Winchester depot that's been unused for years has been taken over by Hampshire Police. The gates by the former goods shed in Barfield Close, Bar End, were left open one day last week, revealing a large number of marked and unmarked police cars. The vehicles are parked just down the road from one of the police workshops, with the force having a collection of workshops across the county. The site was revamped several weeks ago with new gates and many yards of razor wire on top of the fencing. Hampshire Constabulary released this statement. We can confirm that since November 2023, we have been using a secure site in Bar End as part of our work to decommission police vehicles that are no longer being used operationally. This routine work does not affect our ability to respond to incidents or the service we provide to the community, the statement added. And the second completely different piece is about awards for six students at Henry Beaufort for safety work. Six Henry Beaufort students will receive a Head Teacher Award for highlighting internet safety at Week Primary School. Tilly, Archie, Matthew, Joseph, Maisie and Oliver delivered advice on how to stay protected online to four classes. Equipped with their own personal experiences, they gave detailed information on the topic. They held small group discussions with Year 5 to 6 pupils, answering a variety of questions on the topic of e-safety and internet usage. The Head Teacher Award recognises the maturity and expertise the six students demonstrated whilst educating the younger pupils on such a vital yet sensitive subject. And the third Belgaren piece has the title Penguin Arrives Welcomed at Zoo Colony. A zoo in Hampshire has welcomed 10 new Humboldt penguins to join its colony. The new arrivals, which travelled down to Marwell from London, joined Jacko, Sushi, Iggy, that's Igor, and Pistachio in the zoo's Penguin Cove. They are expected to take a little time to settle into their new home, and visitors are likely to notice the group establishing a new pecking order over the next few weeks. Dan Garrick, birds team leader, said, "The new birds underwent their transport well and were checked over by our veterinary and birds team on arrival. They have settled in quickly and the two groups have been seen mixing in the pool and on the land area. The new birds have been actively exploring the enclosure and we expect they will do this for several days until they get familiar with their surroundings. The entire flock will remain in quarantine for 30 days, and the birds team will be keeping a close eye on things during this period. Once quarantine is successfully completed, guests will be able to get closer access to the pool. Face-to-face experiences will also resume from April, where guests can get to see the birds even closer and chat with our knowledgeable keepers. In the wild, they can be found in Chile and Peru, but populations are declining due to reduced prey availability, climate change, as well as human destruction of nests."
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Or further ahead, we've got a packed programme of concerts for festival. The Winchester Chamber Music Festival is returning to the city in May, and there's a range of concerts, and they will be held at St Paul's Church, the Theatre Royal, the Nutshell, and St Lawrence's Church, and that's between the 3rd and the 6th of May. And the artistic director, Kate Gould, said, "We will be resident again throughout the weekend at St Paul's Church, but also return to other popular venues from previous years. The relaxed and intimate Nutshell venue in town, perfect for our family concert and the masterclass for our emerging quartet in residence. The wonderfully atmospheric St Lawrence Church for the late night concert, and the Theatre Royal Winchester for a celebratory festival gala concert where all the artists join forces in a string orchestra extravaganza." Well, I'm sure there'll be more details of the concerts in the festival coming out in the next upcoming weeks. Other events on Saturday the 9th of March, the National Theatre, the National Theatre Live will be showing Vanya with Andrew Scott, and that will be shown at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street. So that will be the live show, the live production of Vanya will be shown at the Theatre Royal, and you can get tickets from the box office on 01962 840440. Another piece of music. We've got Baroque Masterpieces. This is also on Saturday the 9th of March, and the nave of Winchester Cathedral will resound with magnificent Baroque trumpets and timpani as the Wainfleet singers are joined by Florilegium for a brilliant evening of Baroque Masterpieces. That's at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are £15 to £50, and you can phone 07746 228 352 to find out more information. On Thursday the 14th of March, the Hampshire Hedge Project we've got to join Ellie Banks, CPRE Hampshire, to discover this amazing project connecting the New Forest and South Down National Parks with a nature recovery corridor winding its way through central Hampshire. And that's at Badger Farm Community Centre at 7:30 on Thursday the 14th. Tickets are £5 and you can ring 07804 764 604 if you're interested in that. And on Friday the 4th of April, the UK's leading live music tribute to George Harrison will be performing at the Plaza Theatre in Romsey. And that's at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are £19.50. Well, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 9th of March, the sun will set at 6:01 p.m. And on Wednesday the 13th of March, the sun will rise at 6:22 a.m. and will set at 6:08 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Richard, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Well, you may be pleased to know that the district sees a 40% reduction in fly tipping. Fly tipping in the Winchester district has reduced by 40%, a recent meeting heard. Winchester City Council Chief said the reduction is due to a new specialist fly tipping officer and more cameras in hotspots. Despite this, Councillor Neil Cutler, Cabinet Member for Finance and Performance, said that Hampshire County Council's proposals to close tips would see more incidents. At the full council meeting on February the 22nd, Councillor Cutler said, "Fly ticking across Hampshire increased when Hampshire County Council introduced charges for do-it-yourself materials and further increased massively across the whole county during the closure of tips over lockdown. It seems highly likely that further closures and reduced opening hours of Hampshire waste recycling centres would add to the likelihood of increased fly tipping across Hampshire. We, in the Winchester district, suffered from an increase in fly tipping incidents at a similar rate to our neighbouring authorities in 2020 and 2022, which is why we put in place a change to our strategy. We appointed a specialist fly tipping officer with experience of evidence gathering and prosecution. This, along with use of cameras and signage in hotspots, has resulted in a 40% reduction in the number of incidents in 22-23. This reduction was the fifth highest in the county and by far the largest reduction in Hampshire.
Next article is entitled Veg Box Business Opens Market Garden. A Winchester business providing vegetable boxes is launching a market garden to meet the demand for good value, fresh and healthy produce during the cost of living crisis. Hampshire Veg Box in Winnall is opening a 2-acre market garden to create a more resilient food system and grow more of the produce it supplies. Seb Mayfield, who co-founded the Veg Box scheme during the pandemic, said, "We started to give greater access to locally grown veg for local people in a convenient way. Since then, we have continued to see the harmful effects of long, centralised supply chains, both to the environment and our food security. The new market garden will ensure greater food security for the people in this area, and I can't wait to get going." John McLaren, who runs the veg box operations in Winchester, has seen people struggle more over the last 2 years, as many have had to weigh up healthy food versus the cost of living. He said, growing our own crops, to be able to fill the bags each week, will enable us to share even better value, but still supply superbly fresh, healthy vegetables with our great customers, and we look forward to being able to invite everyone down to see us in our new home. The VegBox team has partnered with Rushmere Farm in Hambledon to start an initial 2-acre market garden that will provide organic vegetables, including salad, kale, tomatoes, beetroot, spring onions, chard, cucumbers, cabbage, and so much more. Locals will be able to get involved in events, volunteer days, and farm tours. As well as sourcing more of their own vegetables, the Market Garden Community Interest Company will supply local pubs, restaurants, cafes, and shops. Chris Huskins, who recently ran a farm in Sussex, will be heading the new market garden. He said, "The link between how our food is grown, how the soil is treated, the taste of the food, and the nutritional value it has been studied and recognised all over the world. With Hampshire Market Garden, we will not only grow food more locally, reducing the carbon footprint of the food you eat, but we'll also be able to show that food grown in a regenerative and organic way, without chemical inputs or toxic pesticides, not only tastes better, but is also much better for your health." The Market Garden in Hambledon will start this month with the support of LEAP, Loans for Enlightened Agriculture programmes, and will be producing its own organic food available from June this year. For more information, go to hampshiremarketgarden.co.uk.
Peregrine death. Winchester's resident peregrine, who has nested at the cathedral since 2017, has died. Winnie recently returned to her perch at Winchester Cathedral, but she had died last week, killed by a younger rival. Three peregrines, including Winnie and her partner William, had been recently seen. The third was another female, who appears to have taken Winnie's place. In a post on Winchester Cathedral's website, Keith Betton, chairman of Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "After the return of our regular pair, Winnie and William, just over a week ago, people saw three peregrines in the air last Wednesday. Clearly, an unattached bird had arrived on the scene and a scuffle followed. This happens quite often, and usually it ends quite quickly. But occasionally, it can lead to injury. And now we can confirm Winnie was found dead the next day. Although this is upsetting, it is the natural course of events in nature. The younger individuals displace the older ones, and the cycle of life goes on." In a post on the Wild Winchester web Facebook page, Mr. Betton added, "I have known Winnie since she first nested in Winchester in 2011. She was a fantastic mother. She reared five chicks in 2020, something that very few peregrines ever do. And she was an ambassador for her species, being watched not only by us, but by thousands of people from around the world."
Matt, what have you got for us, Richard?
Yes, I've got a rather sad story. "It's killing us," say family waiting for inquest. A family has been left waiting for answers over the death of their 32-year-old son at Winchester Prison for 2 years. Inmate Craig Steadman, 32, died at the prison in February 2022. His mother, Shelley Steadman, said the ongoing wait for the inquest into his death is killing her and his grandmother. Shelley and Margaret Steadman are from Eastleigh, believe that people like Craig, who suffered from mental health issues, should not be sent to prison, as they won't get the support they need. The mother and grandmother laid flowers outside the prison in Romsey Road on Tuesday, February 27th, to mark 2 years since Craig died. Shelley said, "People with mental health problems like this shouldn't be allowed to go into prison. I want justice. I'm fighting this for Craig and to stop all the people with mental health issues coming in here. Why shouldn't... he shouldn't be gone. Why him? He'll be here every year, no matter what. He was funny. He was always the clown, and he had a heart. I'm hoping there are going to be answers. The waiting is absolutely killing us. I can't bring him back. I just miss him. The inquest is going to be a long process as well. But he's happier now, and he's safe." Grandmother Margaret Steadman said, "I've lost my soulmate." The chaplain from Winchester Prison offered his support to the Steadmans when they were outside laying flowers. Craig, who also suffered from type 1 diabetes, would have been 35 this year. He'd been at the prison for 5 weeks before he died. An outbreak of disorder was reported the same day, but his death is not believed to be linked. An inquest was supposed to be held in January, but had been postponed to July.
City Centre site for auction. A rare freehold development site in Winchester City Centre is to be auctioned. Fronting St George's Street, the infill plot is being sold with planning consent for the construction of a ground floor retail unit with two-bedroom self-contained apartment on the first and second floors. The site is being sold with a guide price of £125,000 to £135,000. Rob Marchant, the Hampshire auctioneer with Clive Empson Auctioneers, said, "Once completed, the commercial and residential units are considered ideal for resale into the local marketplace or retention for their ongoing income-producing potential. This is a rare freehold development site in the cathedral city, and we anticipate keen interest. Also being auctioned is a semi-detached house with planning permission to add two houses at 1 Fox Lane in Stanmore. The guide price for this site is more than £600,000. Planning permission was granted by Winchester City Council in February for two-bedroomed houses, following the demolition of a single-storey side wing of the property. Clive Empson Auctioneers has 147 lots listed in its March auction, the second of eight across southern England this year. The auction ends on Wednesday, March the 20th, and bidding opens 48 hours beforehand.
Body Shop branch to stay open. Winchester's Body Shop has dodged a bullet, as it has been confirmed that the branch will stay open. This follows announcements that 75 stores nationwide will close after the company entered administration. Winchester is among 116 Body Shop stores which will remain open. 75 branches of the cosmetic company will close over the next 4 to 6 weeks, with 489 staff made redundant. Joint Administrator Tony Wright said, "In taking swift action to right-size the Body Shop UK store portfolio, we have stabilised the business and are providing the best opportunity for this iconic brand to have a long-term, sustainable future. The UK business continues to trade in administration, and we remain fully focused on exploring all options to take the business forward."
Menopause Cafe adds new sessions. Winchester's first Menopause Cafe has added two more sessions due to the first cafe being booked up a month before the event. The scheme, designed to combat stigma and build awareness around menopause, is launched at the Cabinet Rooms in Jury Street this month. The first free event, organised by Sharon Worth, a personal trainer, also known as the Meno Coach, or should that be Meno, who specialises in supporting women's health and well-being, is fully booked. To meet the high demand, Sharon has added an extra two menopause cafes on Thursday, April the 18th and Thursday, May the 16th. She said, "Overwhelming response underscores the clear need for such supportive initiatives within our community, and I'm heartened to see so many individuals embracing conversations surrounding this important topic. I believe that increased dialogue can only foster greater awareness and support for everyone involved." Both will run from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at Cabinet Rooms. The April session is open for bookings on Eventbrite, while bookings for the May event will open from Tuesday, March the 19th. A Menopause Cafe is a discussion group open to all ages and genders. The movement started in Perth in Scotland in 2017 and has spread across the world, with volunteers now hosting pop-up events in the UK, Bahrain, Mexico, USA, Austria and India. To book the April event, go to eventbrite.com/e/Menopause Cafe Winchester, Hampshire, UK.
Building well underway. Work is well underway to convert a historic site in Bishop's Waltham into a housing development. In August 2022, Winchester City Council permitted the Abbey Mill Place development of a 66-bedroom care home, 38 assisted living flats, 19 family homes, and 12 affordable homes at Station Road. Abbey Field, next to the palace, will be cleared of self-seeded trees and become a public open space. Developer Beechcroft's plan will see the conversion of the historic Abbey Mill into four flats. The site was at the centre of a controversy more than 5 years ago when Sainsbury's proposed a new supermarket, an issue that divided the market town.
Brendan Care celebrates 40 years with Time Capsule. A Hampshire charity is marking its 40th anniversary with a year-long Time Capsule project. The Brendan Care Foundation was established on February the 14th, 1984, and will be burying the capsule at the close of the year in the grounds of Brendan Care, Otterbourne Hill. The capsule will be filled with photographs, stories and poems showcasing the festivities taking place in Brendan Care's care homes and community clubs, as the charity celebrates four decades of improving older people's quality of life. Celebrations will include farm animals visiting St Giles View, a heart-themed party, and a 40th anniversary celebration at Otterbourne Hill, complete with guests from Brendan Care Meadway and Brendan Care Knightwood. A Valentine's lunch has also been held at Brendan Care Stilden. The charity is also releasing a cover of Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You, performed by residents, staff, volunteers and club members. Marianne Wansell, Brendan Care's chief executive, said, "Our anniversary gives us the perfect opportunity to celebrate with all the wonderful people, our residents and Muse residents and their relatives, community members, our colleagues and volunteers who make Brendan Care the vibrant, forward-thinking organisation it is today."
Tells of fears over danger pavement. A Winchester man is criticising the county council for the state of a pavement which was relaid less than 2 years ago. The paving slabs in Southgate Street were replaced in September 22, but some are already starting to come loose and create trip hazards for pedestrians. Howard Jenkins, a consultant chartered building surveyor, is concerned that taxpayers' money is being misspent, with the work to improve the pavements being so quickly undone. Mr. Jenkins, 69, who lives in Archery Lane off Southgate Street, counted 22 loose paving slabs when walking down a short stretch of the street. He said, "After 18 months, it has happened quite literally in the last few weeks. I suddenly noticed that a number of sleds have started to move. When a pavement is redone, it should be indefinite, particularly with the amount of effort they put in. If this work had been done properly, it should last forever. When they laid the concrete slabs, they were terribly thin and brittle, and that is why they're now broken.
Delivery vans drive on the pavements and park there. A lot of money's been spent, and 18 months later we have a trip hazard for children and the elderly. They could fall flat on their face. People forget it's our money, and I resent it. I don't see that the money has been well spent, so they should be held to account. The County Council must have had some supervisory role and needed to check the work of the contractors. Mr. Jenkins contacted the County Council and was told that his message would be passed on. The County Council says it'll inspect the pavement, that the work completed in autumn of 2022 was up to scratch. We're arranging for an inspection following reports. Repairs will be undertaken. The paving work completed in November 22 was carried out to the correct standard. However, pavements in busy historic areas alongside narrow streets are more susceptible to damage from delivery vehicles overrunning the road edge and illegally parking. Our engineers do take this into account within their designs, but the location of underground apparatus, including live utility cables, can often restrict the options that are available.
Forest School swaps owners. Excuse me. A day nursery in Forest School in Shedfield has been sold to a nursery group. Fairlands Day Nursery in Church Road off Botley Road was one of four Barn Kids nurseries sold to Bright Stars Education, which now has 109 properties. Barn Kids Nursery's owners, Laura and Dara Jones, decided to sell to allow them to pursue new business ventures. The independent nursery group comprised Barn Kids and Fairlands Day Nursery, which utilise forest schools and outdoor learning to make the most of their rural locations, and Puddle Ducks Day Nursery and the Friendly Fish Day Nursery and Beach School. Together, they can accommodate up to 264 children between the ages of 3 months and 5 years. Laura and Dara Jones said, "We're delighted to have found an exceptional nursery group in Bright Stars who share our vision and enthusiasm for outdoor education. We chose Bright Stars as we felt they share our commitment to providing high-quality education, as well as fostering a nurturing environment for our team and children. We felt that the values and principles that we've built will continue to remain at the core of the Barn Kids Group post-acquisition, and their expertise and resources will contribute to the continued growth and success of all of the nurseries." Stephen Booty, chairman of Bright Stars Education, said, "We're thrilled to welcome all four settings into the Bright Stars family. Although the previous owners acquired the nurseries individually, they successfully transformed them into a cohesive group with a focus on quality childcare and incorporating outdoor learning to make the most of their rural locations."
Bars Hospital Library Launch. Neonatal babies at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital can now benefit from a huge library. Parents Matt Taylor and Claire Andrews launched the project for the Winchester Hospital to support future neonatal babies following the birth of their daughter Poppy. Poppy was born in February last year via emergency caesarean, suffering from severe brain damage following pregnancy complications. During the family's weeks in neonatal care, Matt and Claire were encouraged to read to Poppy as much as possible to stimulate brain development and promote recovery. The pair have now opened Poppy's Library inside the unit, a collection of around 100 children's stories mounted across two wall racks for families to use. Matt said, "We found that reading to Poppy helped us to form a bond with her and gave us a proactive role to play in her recovery, as well as a sense of normality in this overwhelming situation. Not only did the reading help with Poppy's development, but we found it really hopeful to have something to focus on rather than ruminating on the uncertainty." Claire said, "We felt that creating a library on the neonatal unit would be a great way of giving something back, as well as providing other parents with a selection of books to read to their little ones. We hope that it gives them the same sense of calm and purpose that we had when reading to Poppy. When parents read a book from Poppy's library, they are encouraged to record their baby's name inside the cover to help families feel connected as a form of reassurance. Rowan Twaddle, clinical matron of Winchester's neonatal service at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Reading to neonates is incredibly important for so many reasons. Not only does it improve their neurodevelopment, but it also helps to strengthen the bond between parent and baby through voice. We are incredibly grateful that Claire and Matt have donated this amazing library through our charity and know that it will help to support many families here with us in the future. To build the library, Matt and Claire donated funds to Hampshire Hospital's charity, which was able to purchase the books as well as receive contributions from a local nursery. For more information on the charity or to donate, go to hampshirehospitalscharity.org.uk.
Store is a natural fit for Firm. A sustainable underwear and sleepwear brand is launching at a fashion store in the city centre. Nudea, N-U-D-E-A, will be on sale at Redress, that's Re colon Dress, in Romsey Road from today. The company offers bras, briefs and pyjamas created from natural and recycled materials. A spokeswoman said, "Redress is all about sustainable fashion and premium pre-loved products, and Nudea is a B Corp certified sustainable underwear and sleepwear brand from the UK. It's a natural fit for Redress to offer their customers a sustainable offering for underwear and sleepwear alongside their fantastic range of pre-loved items. The partnership follows Nudea's new fondant pink sleep collection, with all pieces being 100% cotton."
Tracy prepares to show off huskies at Crufts. A Hampshire dog owner who met her partner through sled dog racing is preparing to show her two Siberian huskies at Crufts. Tracy Evans, 46, from Stockbridge, will be showing Maya and Poppy, aged 8 and 1 respectively, at the NEC in Birmingham. Despite turning 9 shortly after this year's Crufts competitions, Maya has never competed before, and Ms. Evans did not expect that she ever would at her age. But when she started taking her rescue dog, Mishka, to ringcraft classes last year, Maya started feeling left out. Ms. Evans said, "Maya would just sit by the door all night when I took Mishka to classes. She felt left out. So I thought I'd take her along and she'd hate it and never want to come again. But I learned you should never try to outsmart a Siberian husky. I took her for a night at ringcraft, thinking it would stop her sulking. But I was wrong. She loved it and has now shocked us all by qualifying. That wasn't the plan at all. I'm really excited about Crufts. I'm just really proud of the girls and also really shocked. To have taken to it now at the age Maya is, is quite unusual. They do say Siberians are slow to mature. The huskies have got a lot of character and personality, so I hope they can show that on the day. My love of huskies came from rescuing my previous dog, Oscar. He looked like a German shepherd to me. It was only when I went to pick him up from the rescue centre that I realised, and I was reading the paperwork upside down, and I found out he was a husky cross. I went home and ordered a husky book. He was a husky in shepherd's clothing. It was through having him and my relationship with him that made me love the breed. The show dog competitor even met her partner Chris through sled racing. Crufts, the world's biggest dog show, recognises the varied roles that dogs play in society and highlights the many different disciplines and activities for dogs and owners.
Lights fantastic at the cathedral. Winchester Cathedral has been transformed by a royal light and sound show. The immersive attraction features imagery spanning more than 1,000 years of history. Crown and Coronation, created by Historic Royal Palaces, the Tower of London charity, in partnership with Lux Moralis, is at the cathedral until tomorrow. The artistic collaboration between artist Peter Walker and composer David Harper follows the cathedral's latest spectacle of a giant moon. The projections and soundscape sweep through the 14th and 15th century Gothic nave, showing images of the crown jewels projected through detailed footage captured from historic coronation ceremonies. The show, launched at the Tower of London in November, is now touring famous landmarks and locations across the UK. For more information or to book, go to Winchester Cathedral's website.
Rare Beatles tapes up for auction. Three rediscovered cassette tapes containing recordings of the Beatles in 1966 are expected to fetch between £10,000 and £15,000 at auction. They were made on Sir Ringo Starr's personal tape recorder and include clips from the band's tour of Germany, Japan and the Philippines. In the tapes, the group discussed the importance of their famously short and punchy song structures. There's also a demo of the Beatles song Don't Pass Me By and the sound of Sir Ringo performing on the piano. Another soundbite contains the Beatles manager Brian Epstein discussing how to import valuable goods from Japan to the UK without paying high import taxes. Another recording is from the group's first trip to India, where they experimented with traditional instruments. Omega Auctions auction manager Dan Muscatelli Hampson said, "These tapes are a truly remarkable discovery. Hours of previously unheard material from such a pivotal period will be of huge interest to Beatles experts, fans and collectors. And the fact that they're made by Ringo himself and contain such intimate scenes with the band is just incredible. Not only do we have Ringo figuring out 'Don't Pass Me By' at the piano, we may also have the Fab Four experimenting with Indian classical instruments for the first time, as well as simply messing around and having a laugh during what was a famously difficult tour. They have to be heard to be believed." The famous foursome from Liverpool, who formed in 1960, embarked on their last tour in 1966. The tapes from this period had not previously been published after the current owner only recently investigated their content after purchasing them during a sale several years ago. The three cassettes will be sold in the Omega Auctions Beatles collection on March the 26th. Other Beatles collectibles include a signed LP, photo negatives from the photographer Monte Fresco, and film footage of the group in 1964. All will be sold.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye and have a great week. Thank you.